Okay, welcome everyone for the weekly discussion. Venerable Buddha Rakhita is back from after visiting the mother. So last few weeks we maintained the along the Tisamitya Sutta. I think we have now the last verse to finish the discussion. Sorry, the sutta. Before going to that, I would like to know whether anyone is having other questions or topics or any interview reports before going to the traditional one. After a few minutes, then we can start if that is available or not available. Tisamitya Sutta.
Sir, Bhante, Chamila has sent me, forwarded me some reports on three children. Is it possible for me to forward these today?
Please.
Child one, mindful walking. During mindful walking, I focused on the lower part of my body. I had done two sessions back to back while comparing the two sessions. Then I had focused on the sole of my foot and how it started feeling cold but gradually grew warmer as the time progressed. But I felt that after my heel was still cold enough, the rest of my foot wasn't. My feet had inconsistent pattern when walking. At foot start with my heel and then toe, but other times I would just walk with my whole foot going down at once. As I continued, I found myself trying to strain my heel as I tried to fix my pattern to be more consistent. I could stay focused for about 15 to 20. When the second session started, I felt that I was less focused. My feet had given up putting my feet carefully and just walked flat. My head came full of thoughts and my monkey mind was jumping from thought to thought. That's the end of the walking part. Can I continue with the mindful sitting as well?
The walking wise, that sometimes you use the whole feet, that system approach. Sometimes you feel finger by finger, the heel, arch, pillow, and kind of thing, detail. So mind is shifting one to the other. No one is better than the other. So you have to understand how the mind shifting to the system approach to the reductionist part. And while the monkey mind happens, the walking never stops. Still the walking happen. Then who is walking? If the mind is with the monkey, who is walking? While you are in the monkey mind, can you occasionally look back and see whether you are still continuing walking or not? That will be very adventurous. Be very challenging, and there you can find walking happens without myself. That's a perfect walking. The thinking is happening, you are not welcoming, it is wandering mind and daydreaming and monkey mind. But the walking, perfect. So at that time, your walking is like an arahant. So just observe how much you can observe impersonal walking. Now you may continue with sitting, please.
Mindful sitting. During mindful sitting, I focused on my breath. As I inhaled, my breath was cold, but as I exhaled, my breath was warm. Soon enough, my breath became consistently warm. I felt that I had less distraction than I expected, and I continued the practice fine. I could stay focused for around 20 to 25 breaths, and then my mind would float away from the main purpose. When the second session came, I felt restless and had an ache in my arms. I tried to overcome my restlessness and focus on my breath, but for me to focus. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
So if you have two sessions, please report the better one. Rather than reporting all, it will be very bulky. So I don't know which one you prefer, the disturbed mind and wandering disturbed mind or the early one. So, if you are reporting only one, then very easy for me. You have the option to select which one. And while while sitting also, the mind is sometimes restrained, sometimes it is not. Whenever it is restrained, keep the mindfulness or the primary object as the object of mindfulness, as a pivotal point, as the benchmark. Other time, you understand you are mindful, but the mind is shifting the objects. So you have to meditate till the mind do find no discrimination whether in one single object or many objects. That is the way you are maturing now. Your maturity is now. So please go prepared for that kind of meditation, and you can see your own maturity, your own personality as you can proceed.
Child 2, mindful walking. During mindful walking, I focused on the lower section of my body. Today's session, instead of doing a session, I do consecutive sessions of walking and sitting mindfulness. In my first session, I noticed that I started with a sense of rigidity. However, as the session progressed, I could sense that my walking posture became more relaxed. I noticed that when I walk, there is a cyclic pattern where when I lift one foot off the ground, the pressure moves to the other foot. Previously, I had thought that a breaking of this pattern happened at the end of the path when we turn around. However, in this session, I observed that the same cyclic motion occurs, however, in a more subtle manner. In the second session, I noticed that change in how often my mind wandered around. The number of times it had moved from the primary object had reduced drastically. A comparison to the previous session, become more conscious on my mental state from the already completed session beforehand. The sensation that I sense on the sole of my foot were prominent in my second session in comparison to my first session. In the second session, I observed that I was able to maintain mindfulness on the sole of my foot for longer periods of time compared to the first session. That's the end of the first part of the report, Bhante.
Yet another part.
Yes, Bhante, the walking, the sitting session.
So now we finished walking, isn't it?
That's right, Bhante.
The second part also carrying some walking?
It's about mindfulness. So mindful sitting. In sitting mindfulness, I focus on my breath during the entirety of the session. When breathing, I could feel that the breaths I would inhale were more prolonged and easier to sense in comparison to the breaths I exhale, which were shallow and warmer. I also sensed that my chest felt dropped significantly when I exhale. However, when I inhale, it was barely noticeable. I also gathered that the in-breath was more noticeable from my right nostrils rather than my left nostril, which I was not as detectable. Between the in-breaths and out-breaths, there was a slight pause where nothing occurred, which became more evident to me as the session continued. Around 10 minutes in, I got bored and thoughts started taking over, but I just observed those thoughts and brought it back to myself when I got tired of listening to those thoughts. I was able to maintain mindfulness on my breath for around 20 breaths. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
So walking also, you better report on the second session because it appeared to be good. So that will reduce the time and the essay will be straightforward. And they are in the sitting also. Even the boredom happens, you have been prepared for that, so that after the boredom again you can continue. That's the way one day you will see through the boredom, you will see through the monotony, you will see through the sleepiness. And it's a great achievement for a child. Otherwise, easily children give up. Elderly people also very childish, they also just easily give up because they do not know how to endure the boredom. So it's a very well reported. So please look forward to see. Boredom can set in any time. You go prepared, then boredom will be a slave, servant, and you will be the master. Otherwise, you will be the slave or the servant, and the boredom will be the master. So please report in a regular way. So I am really promoting, really happy to listen the reports from the children.
This is the last Sripad Bhante, child 3. During mindful walking, walking focused on the lower part of my body, especially the sole of my foot. Today, however, was different. I had done 2 sessions of walking and sitting. At the start of the first session, my mind was constantly wandering off. Only once I had brought it back, I felt the coldness and hardness of the wooden walking path. As the practice went on, my focus further refined on the balls of my feet. I noticed how it rolled across the floor when I lifted my foot off the ground. Near the end of the first session, my mind started to wander off. Yet I had an overall general idea of the walking process. For my second session, which was after sitting session, my legs were quite tired from sitting and it took a few laps to find balance. Once I had established this, the foremost object was my breath, even though I was walking. This could be due to the fact that I had just been a sitting session. I left my mind focused on my breath. However, I gradually brought it to the sole of my foot. During both sessions, my mind kept getting distracted because it was thinking about the phrasing of language of my reflection. Would we treat this as another thought, or should we take notice of this? That's the end of the report, Bhante.
So you have well tackled the changing from the sitting to walking, and that part usually people don't report. It's a transitional period, the imbalance, and then again you come back to the walking. Still the breathing is the attention because the effect of the previous sitting. So how it swiftly, naturally going to the walking, it's a very well reported. So you have reported 2 sessions of sitting. Please reduce it to 1. The report on the better one, and continue to see how the change from sitting to walking, walking to sitting, left to the right, right to the left. The transition period is the most critical. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Bhante. Teron-san.
Okay, we are now going to the Tisamitiya Sutta. In the last verse of the Tisamitiya Sutta, in the Parayana Vagga, the Sutta Nipata, I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakita to start.
Okay, so when the Muni lives void, indifferent to sensual pleasures, people tied to sensual pleasures envy him as one who has crossed the flood. So here again, a Muni is somebody who is like a recluse or somebody who is striving on the path for arahantship, somebody who is a serious spiritual practitioner. So when the Muni lives void, indifferent to sensual pleasures. So in this case of living void, it's imbibing oneself in a life where one has equanimity, is very rich in equanimity, is void of like the highs and the lows, is void of sense pleasure or sense aversion. So the word here is void, but it doesn't mean like empty or devoid or in fact, they've made a basis of equanimity in their life and they are indifferent to sensual pleasures. So again, here, this indifference is referring to equanimity of mind. So it's an indifference meaning not interested in sensual pleasures. It's not an indifference meaning numb. So again, this would be a failure in an ascetic towards sensual pleasures, which would be to be indifferent, meaning to be numb towards those sensual pleasures. It's an indifference, meaning a lack of interest in them, or that sensual pleasures no longer trap the mind of the Muni. So people tied to sensual pleasures envy him. So they have an envy, meaning they don't have an appreciative joy. They are envious, meaning like they'll say things like, oh, sure, it's easy for you. You don't have our stresses and strains. You don't have to take care of children or welfare of elders or other such things. So in this way, people are envious of the so-called stress-free life of the the Muni. But it isn't that the Muni is indifferent, meaning callous or ignorant or just numb, but instead they have an equanimity, a very balanced mind towards them. And those people who are tied to sensual pleasures, they haven't cultivated this mudita or sympathetic joy. So they are envious. So rather than asking questions like, how do you manage stress in your life? How do you manage the challenges in life? How do you manage yourself when you are faced with something of great attraction or great aversion? They instead are just envious, saying things like, oh, it's easy for you, or that's, you know, you just avoid these problems. And they fail to see that this person may be on the path to crossing the flood, or that they have crossed the flood. So this idea of crossing a flood is very prevalent throughout the suttas. Obviously, the Buddha was teaching in the river Ganges. So there are floodplains and rivers to be crossed in many places. So this idea of crossing the flood is crossing the flood of suffering, ogaha. And so this is a metaphor, again, for liberation from defilements. And when we cross the flood, maybe we use the teaching as a raft to cross the flood. But having fully crossed the flood, having got to the other side, we put aside the raft. We have finished with the path as such. So this is the purpose of the holy life, is to cross the flood. And other people are not making the effort to cross the flood. They are overwhelmed by the flood. And it's interesting that we use this word flood in terms of emotions these days, flooded with tears, or just floods of emotion. And it is a metaphor that is very rich and captures this natural phenomena of how defilements, mental states, especially these sensual pleasures, they flood and overwhelm the mind. So this is just some brief thoughts on this final stanza in this sutta.
So I will present the Sinhala and the original Pali. Rittasya munino charato kamesu anapekkhito anapekkhino oga tinnasya piheyanti kamesu gatita paja. The muni, his characteristics are given. No verbal and physical misdeeds, and behavior is solitude, no second person, is living in solitude, and no expectation on the sensuous pleasure. Not callous, but no expectation, and he crossed the river. So this muni is being delighted by other people with full of sensuous pleasure. That is the main theme, main idea. People with full of sensuous pleasure respect the muni with these characteristics, with these qualities. So that is to make a distance from the muni and the sensuous beings. That is the religion. Religion is always take the renowned or the enlightened people are living in the heaven. They are very, very praiseworthy. They are heroes. But we are just creatures. So only thing we can do is pay respect, pay respect, pay respect. They never try to be heroes. So that is highly exploited by the religious masters, religious leaders. They say, we are so and so, you people are just creatures. So therefore, either you have to follow us or you have to keep us on the pedestal and start whitewashing. So the Buddha is giving here, it's a good part. The sensuous beings is being, they are respecting the munis or the saints. It's a good way. The munis has a pleasant approach, pleasant acceptance from the people. But he must know to teach them, you all are the same. You also can be munis. You're not living in another world. I am also the same at the beginning. So therefore, The muni's human quality and the sensuous being's muni qualities are the being exploited in the religion. This is unbridgeable. No. You people are sentient beings. They are munis. They are born munis. You are born sensuous beings. So that is the philosophy is making, and ultimately the inferiority is increasing, gap is increasing. But instead you can say even munis, they have bad thought moments. Even the sensuous beings, they have a good thought moments. So if you know how to explore the good thought moment, the prasanna manasa, then he can understand there are some partial muni qualities or partial enlightened qualities even in the sensuous life, even in the household life. If you can highlight it, this verse having special meaning. Each being, they have a mixture. Muni is good, bigger, lion's share is the good part and the little amount of bad. But the sensuous being, lot of bad things, but substantially big part, more than we expect, good qualities. So you have to sympathize them, have to let them sympathize themselves and explore. They must see how to write, how to share, how to expose their good qualities. Then the bridge will be reduced. Then enlightenment will be a human thing. It is not a heavenly thing. So the Buddha is the only person born as a human being and gone up to that level. And again, he had, of course, doubt to come back and preach the Dhamma at the beginning because the gap was so much. But ultimately, he lived 45 years as a human being and he told, have a hope. You also can. So I really appreciate Venerable Dhammika. That is the idea he gave. You are a naughty boy. No problem. But the potential is there. You have the potential. So therefore, don't worry about the naughty parts. Just think about the Tibetology is mindfulness. Buddhists completely lost that. They say, no. Next life, you have to have the perfection and meet the Mittiya, the Buddha. Then you will be enlightened quickly so you see the Buddha. There is no gradual process. They don't say that you have Buddha qualities, Buddha nature. So I try my best to teach my mother, but she was a devoted lady. I mean, I am killing. I am stealing. Always waiting for sexual pleasure. And lying, slandering, unlimited. We don't consider them as qualities. My mother is very... But I tried. You also have... She says, don't worry. You can't convince me. I am a sentient being. I cannot. So it was a very affectionate relationship. And I never tried with my sisters and brothers. But they are learned people. I can't because I am a very idiot person according to their measurement. But mother thinks I am a learned person because I went to university, some kind of thing. All my sisters and brothers very bright, but no one went to university. They got love affairs and married life and finished. So my relationship with the mother, by that time my father was died. So mother tried to understand. But her mentality is blocking it. Telling you people are learned people. I have gone only to grade 2. But she made 11 children. And all of them are good people. But she says, I am an idiot bumpkin. So I also started with that. Still I am continuing like that. But I know there are partial goodness in each and everyone. I try to see that. And sometimes I am harsh. To tell, don't worry about your bad part. Leave it aside. I am not telling about the person, I am telling your qualities. Because Venerable Dhammika was a success character to teach me. He taught me that learn your badness, that is your goodness. So that part is still living in Buddha. All the other things, it is no, God is there, you can't reach. It's a huge gap. You have to get the grace of the God, the compassion of the God, and therefore you have to satisfy Him. So, some people do not understand it, but they are blindly follow it. But the Buddha says they love munis, they love saints. They've been sentient beings. They love sense, so there's a bridge. There's a naval code. So you have to explore into that and tell, hey, you also have. The way the Buddha explained it is, when we know we are meditating monks in the forest and kind of thing, we say, dana, sila, bhavana. Or give almsgiving, sila, samadhi, panya. The gradual process, we are doing panya, bhavana, therefore we are supreme. So therefore, whenever people are going to give dana and accrue merit, we say, no, it is an inefficient method. The best method is vipassana. But the end of the vipassana and the beginning of dana, Buddha explained the same, what do you call, it's not the explanation, I can't remember the term. Chaga padinisagga mutti analayo. Chaga means charity, giving. Padinisagga is releasing. Mutti, you get rid of them. Analyo, no love. So this is the way Buddha explained the dana. This is the exactly way Buddha explained Nibbana. So dana also having some qualities of Nibbana. Even though we say the dana giving is, people are very happy to give dana, but they are not meditating. But if we can tell them, while giving dana, you have the chaga, you have patinisaga, mutti, anal, please appreciate it. While giving, you see that it's a valuable thing and it is earned in the justifiable way, so you can consume. But you are giving it to unknown person, chaga. Patinisaga, you see, even that you can give in a meritorious way, charity, mutti. You can release and you go home with less possession. Analyo, you have no desire to what you have given. Exactly that is what you call Nibbana. So therefore, you have to appreciate dana and appreciate in a vipassana way. Appreciating in a reflective way, radical reflection. So therefore, each and everything, the rituals and anything, you can do mindfully. And when you are doing mindfully, almost Nibbana. So there you have a very good meaning for duties, vata. Daily monks we have to do perform some vata, sweeping and doing Buddha puja, all the kind of thing. So you have to do it in a mindful way. So whether you are doing vipassana, sitting meditation or doing vata or the duties, mindfully exactly the same. So therefore when you are doing vata, when you are doing your duties in a dutiful way, Buddha says everyone appreciating. Even people not doing matha, they are appreciating it. The Buddha says when you are sweeping, 5 benefits. Your mind will be pleasant. Any person who would see unswept area and swept area, you can see area swept is pleasant. Even the God is happy with you, the celestial view. And your health will be good. Likewise, 5 benefits. What you are doing is sweeping a street. But if you are telling it as a slave, it is saying that people are exploiting me, I have only this sweeping, 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 I have no time for meditation. Bloody idiots. But the thing is, at the beginning, you have to give sitting time, walking time, kind of thing for working, and teach them the sweeping or sitting, no difference. But to mindfulness, up to the power of mindfulness level, then only you can understand the performing duties. It's also impersonal. Sitting also impersonal. So that part is the best quality. Ritta Samanino Charato, he is free of verbal, physical misdeeds. And he is a solitude person, the muni, the mute. And no benefits, no sensuous benefits. No expectation of karma. And he crossed the... I think I heard the term crossing the river Rhine. German river is the one to cross for the permanent. There's in English, there's a proverb. Crossing the Rhine or something like that. Cross the... I can't remember the river name. Once you go on there, you are not coming back. So that's it. So Buddha also used Ogatarana. You go once, go there, you are supreme. So Muni was having. So each and every person is having that qualities. But they are not appreciating. then they are not getting benefits. The Dhamma sermon is to teach them how to appreciate their good qualities. Then they understand, I have some Buddha qualities. I have some sentient qualities. Sorry, saint qualities. And then he finds, he kind of shocked. We can bridge with the saints. So when you are going for drug addicted rehabilitation camps, and we are meeting the alcoholic people, and Venerable Dhamma, the Vihari, he's having the people work, the girls, beautiful girls, work in spa, and they ultimately fall into the prostitution offenses. And they are rehabilitation, for the rehabilitation, they send it to Kadwela. So when they come, they find a heaven. They are so adhered to the silence, and they say, Bhante, even without a punishment, we would like to come here. I mean, they have so much of quality. They never come to Colombo with that kind of a trade, that kind of a slavery. Ultimately, they fall into that trap and punished into the giving into the meditation center. And they have that same qualities. And well, Dhamma Vihari says, they are understanding very, very, they understand the cross-section of the society. So all bad people doing bad deeds, they have these qualities. So therefore, Muni and them, there are no margin. There's no, he is a Muni, he is a saint, there's no margin. It's everything is mind-made. So the best, the good speakers, good sermon means you break the bridge, break the margin. It says you are also Muni, you are also saint, sentient. You are also saint and sentient. What are the bridging points? So Tissamitya Sutta is in that sense, is asking the question itself is, it's talking about the sexual intercourse. And that make a difference because that's the first parajika. Whether you are a monk or not, dependent upon the sexual intercourse. So whole it is going through the this thing, the sutta, and it's a taboo. It's not a general question we are discussing specifically in the Eastern countries. Keep it, it's an elder's question, so female questions, so male questions, not commonly talking. Western may be different. But this is utterly a historical question, historical answer. Hardly people take it for a discussion table. They are Sutta Nipata books. No one is talking. But they are talking very relevant thing. And nowadays, more than 30, 40 years ago, nowadays people are quite open because there's a huge discussion happen how we can introduce the sexual education for the children in Sri Lankan curriculum. And huge heated argument. Monks went and told, there are some misnautic boys and girls, but if you are going to teach everyone about the sex education, everyone will be naughty. Western countries, everyone is naughty, so you can teach. But not in Sri Lanka. Don't teach. And the education says, I am sorry, we invited monks. Everything messed up. These monks do not happy teaching. And they published already a book. Immediately banned. Before banning, every child read it. Read it specifically that part. Talking about the sex. And they say, oh, never mind, you take the book I have already read. I am thorough about that subject. But this is the first time they came to see such a thing in the school curriculum. You see, the taboo, we are not taking. In my class, when I am going in the age 15, 16, I am an expert. I go to libraries and read about these things and appear like very juicy, very sappy, very, very... And I used to give talks only with the erratic part or the naughty part. Then we thought only boys are doing it. But later I heard naughty girls also doing the same. But it's nothing new, I mean. It's a common thing. After being civilized, we kept them as a separate issue. Because we are not naked. We are not naked ape. We cover it and then the distance happen, and showing the sexual provoking part is not good. And then ultimately it become a huge tension, huge marriage problem, divorce problem, and based upon sex. So being a monk and a nun, the monks must read all the Bhikkhuni Vibhanga, everything explained. All the nuns must read Bhikkhu Vibhanga, the Parajika, the Pachitya Pali, Parajika Pali, everything. And it's such a complete this thing. Even PTS, Pali Tech Society, never translated that part. So you have to learn Pali. In Sri Lanka, very famous monk, Venerable Chandavimala, Renukani Chandavimala, is our age, he translated everything. But he never translated that part. He says, if you wish to learn, learn Pali. It is in Pali. But when you go to English, there is no such a dead language. You have to put into the commonly English. So in the Western culture also, because English is an open language, but the Pali is a closed language, and Pali cannot explain the sex part. It can explain the philosophical part. Sinhala is a cross with the Tamil, Sanskrit and Sinhala. So these parts we kept not to talk. But among monks, I think there is no such a hiding part. Because when you are teaching the novice, when you are teaching the Parajika, when you are teaching the Sanghadisesa, you have to tell everything. You find Vinita Vattu. After the Parajika main offense, there are a lot of shadows, case histories, Vinita Vattu, all the possible ways. Very phonographic, appear to be. So Katukurinda Jnananda is used to Pali language in the university. So many people are happy to learn Vinaya. Because lot of all the Kama Sutra, like everything is available. Of course, they are elderly people. But still, even the monks, some people never talk about that. They are self-mortification type. Some monks are openly talking about that, and sometimes maybe indulgence side. So when in Vipassana, you have to understand, facts are facts. Some people are happy with this the erratic part. Some people are not happy even to talk about. And I don't know the approach difference from the male and female. But used to say, when the earlier the elderly monk is teaching that kind of thing, he used to use the fan. He keep it fan this way, not look at the student's face. And he is reading. Definitely he must teach, but keep a distance. I mean, keep a kind of a blind. So this is the way it happens. But anyway, all the sentient beings, they are happy to associate saints. But keep it up on the pedestal and whitewashing. And that is how all the religious sects are keeping distance, telling we can't go there, but he is so and so. But for the last 20, 30 years, there were some virtuous people on the earth level, and Mahasi Sayadaw was such a person, who Pandita was such a person, who Ba King, who Achancha, and they are really saint people, sainty. But living with the sentient beings, explaining A to Z. So we came into that generation, we are lucky. We can go and see the role models are there, not perfect, but anyway, definitely better. You know, Dhammika told, don't search theoretical maximum. Not available. Just see, someone is better than you. That's it. That's enough. Someone is better in English, language. Someone is better in Vinaya. Someone is better than Suttas. Someone is better in forest life. You can easily find. Just keep him as the role model, and he will push up to his place, and then you can see some more brighter people further. You can see big horizon. Keep on. But before Venerable Dhammika's my meeting, and before, there was a notion in Sri Lanka, there are no good people. Everyone is naughty, everyone is sentient, the sasana is no more, monks are all dirty. I mean, generally, we have enough facts, enough evidences, but Dhammika told, I am also naughty, you also naughty, but that does not indicate mindfulness is so powerful. Our relationship is on mindfulness, no harm. So that is why I try my best in my life, not to show myself as a saint, but I am telling you, each and everyone is having this saint characteristic that in the Mahayana tradition it says Buddha nature. Even the dog has the Buddha nature, they say. That's your nature. Your natural thing is Buddha, not artificial. So that is the end of the Tissamitya Sutta, if you do not have any other remarks. Anyone is happy to contribute or give any comments or any other topics? Otherwise, we are going to go further.
First, the name of the river is the Rubicon. To cross the Rubicon.
Rubicon?
Yeah, Rubicon.
How does it spell?
I don't know. Rubicon. Rubicon. No, not the Rhine, no. Rubicon. It was in I don't know where it is. It's in the Latin stories. Also just coming back to the walking meditation of the first child, actually, I wanted to maybe add a point, which was they were talking about how they were paying attention to how they were walking and interested in maybe changing how they were walking. I've noticed with some people in walking meditation that they mistake mindfulness for being self-conscious. So when we're self-conscious, we're thinking about what would other people think about how I'm walking. So when people walk in a self-conscious way, they can be a little bit awkward, or they feel awkward, or they're self-critical, or they're kind of thinking about what will other people think of how I'm walking. And so this isn't mindfulness. And people in the beginning can also mistake this self-conscious nature or as being mindful. And, you know, I noticed with, again, many Westerners that there it becomes sort of self-critical, and it leads to what they call hypervigilance. So it's a kind of a constant critiquing of ourselves, how we walk, how we move, and a kind of an experience of walking on eggshells, like I'm afraid of what other people will think of my walking. So these are kind of, you could say, toxic forms of self-awareness, or toxic forms of mindfulness in a way. Or it's not real mindfulness. Real mindfulness is free from that ego, free from that critique, free from, you know, what will other people think? And one isn't burdened by excessive thinking about how I'm walking, how I'm moving. But in fact, there's a lightness, and one is just at peace. And this gap between the subject, like the walking experience, and the object of experience of walking, the, you know, how I'm walking with the subjective experience, how do I feel about my walking? That gap decreases and diminishes as one becomes more and more mindful of the walking. Whereas with people who are hypervigilant or self-conscious and self-critical, then that gap is widening all the time between the subjective experience and the objective experience, between this is how the foot is striking the ground, and then how do I feel? Oh, I feel awkward about that, or something like that. So again, you know, I think the children can quite naturally sort of connect with the walking as just walking. But people who are getting it wrong, they don't see walking as walking. They see it in terms of, like I said, this self-conscious nature.
So regarding the point I raised, I try to cover some topics because related to this kind of a subconscious, I was not aware of the proper term. Richard Davidson introduced 7 emotional patterns, and he found in meditation. And he recognized them: reflective type, outlook type, social intuition type, self-awareness type, sensitivity to the context type, and attention type. When you are meditating, you understand what type you are. The resilience type means easily you can come back and recover. Whenever adverse situation, you easily come back. Some people take long time. Accordingly, you can understand your resilience character. And then outlook is then how you prepare for the next time. What is what will be your outlook if you are sleep type and if you are having a subconscious type. So how can you prepare? You run away, you cut off, or you go prepared. The outlook is kind of a defense system. And then social intuition is how other people, how other people look at you. And how do you feel when you are walking in a group or when you are looking in a single place in the forest? So it is a social intuition, social signals. How do you feel other signals? I think it is related to subconscious maybe. And self-awareness. And that sometimes you see you are listening something but walking happens. Who is walking? You are thinking, you are wondering. And you know, but still walking not stopped. So how that walking happens? You see, the in a pageant, beauty queens are walking in a such a way, in a very the rhythmic way, or it's a graceful way. And the bodybuilder coming to the ring for the walking or the boxing and kind, he's walking in a such a way. And the king, wrestlers, different ways. They have their self-awareness, I mean it's obsession, but he's seeing it must be going with the character. But the meditator comes to know how much you are in a role model. You're acting in front of others, but it's always negative. At the beginning it is negative for the yogi, but he categorized them and sensitive to the context and how your ego and emotion, how they are working, and if you feel guilty, how work with the other people. That kind of thing, you think the sensitive to the context. Now we have to go to give a talk. I feel shy. How do you call that? To give a talk to the people? How do you say that shyness?
Anxious.
But specifically society fear or something like stage fear. Stage fright. So there's the sensitivity to the context and the attention. Now how is the theme within your life you keep the attention, right? So I try to expand this into 6 weeks in the mindfulness, this thing, telling there's a book from the Richard Davidson. And then it has been the further given explanation by Padmasiri, Sri Lankan professor living in Melbourne, and he's referring to me often, telling Dhammajiva Hamdru is telling when you are meditating, you understand who are you? Who am I? So I asked the question from Buddha Rakita. When I listened to him, he says subconscious understanding, subconscious is bad, the way that you talk. But I am going to ask you, the understanding you are subconsciously, you do and that, do this and that, only happen in meditation, only happen in mindfulness. And if you know that I am such a person, I am with that kind of a subconscious, that very understanding, the diagnosis and explanation, Buddha highly appreciated according to my understanding. Am I asking the question directly or you are, is my question clear to you?
Not really, because I don't feel that self-consciousness is not subconscious. Actually,
no.
Subconscious is...
I am asking that we have that kind of our directed dispositions. Subconsciously, we do it. We think we are walking, but we may not be.
No. This isn't self-conscious.
Please,
like I found. I've observed with many people, especially when they're learning to walk, and I've seen it with older people and especially older men, and to some degree women, I was teaching, but women are very conscious of their body. So do I look good or do I look like a fool or something like that? Whereas men are more sort of projecting power, that I'm powerful or I'm good at this or something like that. But there's a self-conscious quality to it, meaning they're aware of, they're thinking about themselves And so in that way, it's self-conscious. It's not subconscious. It's an active process.
Subconscious is inactive process.
Subconscious is an automatic process. This is a very active process of thinking about myself, whereas when we're walking mindfully, we're actually not really thinking about ourselves. We're just thinking about the lifting, pushing, dropping, light, heavy, rough, coarse. So it becomes like very careful observation of the actual experience of walking. Whereas people who are self-conscious are more concerned about image, more concerned about what will people think of me and how do I look, you know?
What is the difference between self-conscious and subconscious?
So a subconscious is just, it's saying that I'm not actively thinking about it. I sort of do it out of sheer habit, and I'm not conscious about it. It's subconscious. It's below my consciousness. It's a kind of background activity.
It is a directed disposition. You are underlying tendency.
Yeah, underlining or deeply habituated or automatic processes. Daniel Kahneman calls it, you know, he calls it thinking fast and slow. So yeah. This is the thinking fast side
fast
of the mind.
Fast is, that you say, subconscious.
Is subconscious. But this self-conscious is an active process. Like I see it in people who are learning to walk, where they want to look good, or they want to look powerful, or they want to look like they know what they're doing. And so their object of meditation isn't on the lifting, pushing, dropping. It's not on the physical properties of walking. It's more on their image. It's more on an ego level.
So that means you mean acting. He's
yeah, it's
showing off.
It's a kind of an act. It becomes an act.
No, I am not disturbing you. I am telling that Daniel Kahneman's faster thinking, Malcolm Gladwell says, power of thinking without thinking. It's a kind of a way he is dragging.
Effortless. There's effortless thinking.
Yeah.
If you have the wrong habit, then it's
the power of thinking.
It's
dragging
skillful.
You, but you are not thinking. But it is habitually happening.
Yeah. Well, we can't actively think through every action, because if that was the case, we would not be able to do anything much, or at least. People who are not practiced in mindfulness, they're inattentive, whereas people who are very experienced in mindfulness have a very high quality of attention that they bring to every action in their life. So it's not subconscious. Maybe people who are not paying attention in their life are more subconscious in their behavior. Whereas we're bringing this higher level of consciousness. But when people are learning, they mistake mindfulness for self-conscious behavior. So they're very self-aware, with the emphasis on this ego, like a self.
Sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. I wanted to make it clear. What is the relationship between subconscious and mindfulness?
Subconscious is that we're not giving enough attention to what's going on.
I mean, what is the effect? What is the effect of mindfulness to subconscious, not the self-conscious?
Well, then those subconscious processes start to become exposed. And then you can bring the power of wisdom to that process and make changes.
The psychiatrist, he was there for the last 3 days. Uh-huh. Then he told, I just wanted to explore.
Right.
Tend to do the same thing too I am doing with you. And when you are meditating, that you things are happening. These things happen without my knowledge, but it happened to me.
Yeah.
So some people psychiatrically get, psychiatrists succumb to that situation. And they think I am wrong, I am something wrong with my thinking. But psychiatrist says everyone is having that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if you go prepared, it's a gain for you. You understand who am I, how things are happening.
Yeah.
Out of thinking, without thinking.
Yeah.
But many can't tackle it.
Can't tackle what?
That understand that understanding he consider as a fear. He consider as overwhelming. Psychiatrically, he can't tackle. But prepared people with a good teacher and preparedness and the, prepared mind, they can understand things can happen, but it's good. Because I understand who am I. I understand my diagnosis. So therefore, he says, meditation is so effective, it show you your directed dispositions. underlying tendencies. It's a complete strange. Now, I am telling you, you are bad. Or that is not. That is, I am telling. But you understand, I am so good or so bad, or things are happening in a way. So that revelation, that diagnosis, is the what I just wanted him to. Can we teach this to our master trainers when you are teaching people meditation, mindfulness? Some things, sometimes they can't. The meditator observe directly under their very nose, but they can't comprehend it. But my point is, if you go prepared, it has, say, scriptures are talking about that. Everyone is handling this kind of. So go prepared. Please let us know. Please share. Please write an interview report. Then it is not your knowledge. It is a human knowledge. So you will be released from the disease, your tendency. Am I correct?
Well, I think this, like the Buddha always, he mostly talks about satipanya. He doesn't talk about sati. You know, satipanya. And so this emphasis that we've been given to the Sutta Nipada is giving an emphasis actually to right attitude and right view. So, for instance, in this sutta we've just now done, there was two friends, and they both had a spiritual aspiration to become ordained, but only one of them kind of proceeded into the forest and became an arahant, and the other one reverted back to the lay life. And so later on, that Mithya, who was the arahant, asked the question on behalf of his friend, to so that the Buddha could address this trap of sensual pleasure or sexual pleasure in pulling this former monk out of the holy life and back into the lay life. And so you can say that there's a subconscious attraction for, we'll just say, the female form. And most monks have to become aware of what attracts them, who attracts them, what qualities of a person attracts them. And but you also need a right view and right attitude, and sometimes you need the support of sila, and you need to, for instance, refrain from going into areas where you might find people you find attractive, or you need to keep yourself secluded in the forest. Years ago, back in the 90s, when I would actually first go to the Lanka Vipassana in Rossmead Place, then at that time, the teacher who was staying there, he would always get attractive girls to sit around the forest monks when they would come in from the forest, because he would say that they were secluded from their defilements out in the forest, but it didn't mean that the defilements, the underlying processes, had gone away. And so he would on purpose sort of get pretty girls to sit around these monks, and he would say to them, oh, you know, this monk has very good samadhi, it'll help your meditation if you sit near him. And then this the junior monk would be sitting there like baking, because he would really be overwhelmed. Like we talked about, flooded.
That happened to you also. You are telling the junior monk. Tell you your deep experience. He's just...
No, but it was. I'm just. This was actually happening in the 90s in Rossmead Place, like when I would go to the Lanka Vipassana. So
it happened to you. You are telling that junior monks and all the fabrications. They just tell me that I was baking.
You know, so I'm a Chitta Nupassana yogi. So my guru is not Dhammika. Mine was Godwin. So yeah. For me, you know, if I have sexual thoughts or interest, then that's informing me, that this person has some quality or interest.
I'm inviting to close the discussion because time. So the next day, we must be prepared. I mean, discussion continues. The point you made, the one friend disrobed, the other friend become an arahant. Yeah. But the last verse says, the disrobed monk still love arahant. But he is lost. He is trapped. He is in sensuous pleasure. But the Buddha says in the last, the friend love metti samitteya, respect samitteya. So we have to finish the circle now. At the beginning, deviated, and he went to the lay life, and the other person became arahant. But the Buddha says, no, still the friendship is there. Yeah. So we have to say that particular monk who disrobed and monk become a buried life, still pay respect to Thissa Maitreya. Yeah. So therefore we have to tell how they came same with the path, both met the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, he completely took a wrong line. Household life. But still, there's a kind of a tendency, he appreciates the saint, your friend.
Yeah,
because
sure.
By the time friend has become...
That's the advantage of Kalyanamitta.
Yeah, not the Kalyanamitta. Buddha says it's the nature. Not due to the Kalyanamitta. He says any saint will be appreciated by the sentient beings. General, not the Tishamitaya and his friend.
Yeah.
So you have to justify it tomorrow, next time.
Justify what? Even
the
gods appreciate
the arahant path and he became arahant, the other person bogged down and he's in the sex life or the family whole life. But he has a kind of a respect for the saints.
Yeah, well, they can, but they can also have envy. Like the word that you use here is
the
envy.
Last verse.
Yeah, it's envy. Envy.
No, envy.
Yeah, that's in this translation
of
Bhikkhu Bodhi.
I don't accept it. Not envy. Not envy.
As I mentioned, they lack mudita. So, you know, if
your friend, of course, Tishamitya's friend, we have the mudita and the friendship. So it will be good. But I heard that when you are reading envy, but this one is never talking about the envy. This is, they have a like or respect. We both came in the same path.
Bhikkhu Bodhi used the word envy here.
So we'll meet next time.
Right.
So thank you very much for the effective contribution for the discussion. You never talk, no appreciation. You never talk, no appreciation. He talk, I appreciate. Thank you. But anyway, I give kaju. Sukhi hontu. Kamami kamitabbam.